Real people. Real opinions. Real talk radio. The multi-award-winning Niall Boylan Show. Classic hits.
Primary school teachers are planning and working towards a reopening of the schools at the end of August, according to the General Secretary of the Irish National Teachers Organisation. John Boyle said the closure of schools on March 12th was the right decision, but that it's time to get our children back to school and get our teachers back in front of them. Mr Boyle told RTÉ's Primetime on Tuesday night that it was an ambitious goal to reopen schools. I don't know how it's that ambitious. At the end of the summer, but that it is achievable and there was 11 weeks to plan and prepare for it. Mr Boyle, while he expects primary schools to reopen at the end of August, he couldn't answer whether that would be a full reopening for students. He said they'll definitely weigh up the risk versus the importance of having children in their learning and development. We are not going to object to schools reopening, but we have to acknowledge that a primary school sector is somewhat different. He went on to say that children in primary schools stay in the same classroom all day. They're overcrowded classrooms. That's a challenge. And the fact that they're with adults for so long in the day may be challenging, but at the same time, it's probably easier to keep them apart from the class next door than within the class itself. He's talking about kids, social distancing. Five-year-olds, social distancing. We're having a laugh here, aren't we? According to John Boyle, they're planning and working towards the full reopening, and I want to ask you today what you think of a full reopening of schools. Now, last week, Education Minister Joe McHugh said that the full reopening of schools in September is the only option, but kids may only return for one day a week. He revealed that if the 2 metre social distancing rule remains, or even possibly 1 metre, in place until September, primary school children will only return for one day. If it's a 1 metre, it'll probably be 2 days. Meanwhile, secondary level students will be only allowed to return for 2 days, maybe 3 days if it's a 1 metre for blended learning, which is kind of half on the internet and half in the school. However, if social distance measure were eased, McHugh says, obviously we could extend those times. This is still up in the air, but I imagine we'll get some clarity from the government very soon, maybe even tonight, you never know. So I want to know what you think. I'm sure many of us have kids. Are you sceptical about sending them back to school in August or September? Is that something you're worried about, or are you one of those people, maybe like me, who goes, sure, let's go, let's run with it. Sure, what more can we do? We can't do any more. Let me know what you think. The number is 087-188-0008. Are you concerned about sending your kids back to school in September? I want to speak first if we can to Larissa Nolan, journalist who joins me on the air. Good afternoon to you, Larissa.
Good afternoon, Niall. Thanks for having me on.
Good. Well, you had a bit of a conversation on The Tonight Show the other night about it, so I thought this would be an interesting one for you because maybe you didn't get to get all your opinion across there. But in relation,
that'd be rare, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Rare, but it happens, yeah.
Are you stricken by fear, by the way?
Am I stricken by fear in general or in relation to the schools to the pandemic?
Well, in general to the pandemic, and I suppose in the idea of sending, 70,000 kids back to school again.
Yeah, well, I suppose it's right to... there are certain situations where it's right to feel fear, and fear can... can be an important emotion or whatever. I think it is an emotion, and it can drive you on to do things one way or the other, right? So that's all grand. But the problem is when fear becomes paralyzing, and fear starts to paralyze your logical brain. I suppose I'm trying to keep that balance between things, and it has been lost a little bit in certain areas. Certainly, I think when it comes to schools, there's either an element of... it may be kind of a fear paralysis that's going on in relation to the blockages that seem to be put in front of the return to schools. By the way, every other country nearly across the world, and certainly in Europe, have prioritised schools in the reopening phase. We're the only ones where we seem to have, where parents...
Well, they did have trouble in the UK with the unions as well, didn't they, initially at the start?
Well, actually,
and the unions were putting up obstacles against it. I mean, because social distancing, Larissa, do you think that can actually work? You know, when you've got little Johnny and Mary at 7 years of age and you're telling them to stay away from each other, well, you're probably the best of times for telling them to stay away from each other, but you're telling them to stay away from each other, do you really think that can work?
Well, I think it doesn't have to work, you see, with schools, with children, is the actual science on it. Now, people don't seem to realise this, but I'll say two things. When you have the Children's Rights Alliance and you have the National Parents Council urging children to get back to school, you can be kind of fairly assured that the school situation and the breaches of the social distancing regulations, and when I mean that, I don't mean them climbing on top of each other and sharing each other's sandwiches and never washing their hands or anything like that. What I mean is, in the case of children, we can use reasonable protections without going completely...
Yeah, we ramp up on hygiene, of course, absolutely.
Yeah, in the way we do. They're not actually... Children don't have... Thank God. I tell you something, I'd be living in a bunker and you wouldn't see me, I wouldn't be on the radio saying let's get schools back if they were in particular danger. The merciful thing about this whole the whole coronavirus is that children are there is an exceptionalism around it. They're the least infected. They don't get it at any rate like adults do, and when they do, it's
asymptomatic. It tends to be asymptomatic. Yes,
the risk is tiny. Thank God. I'm always saying this. I hope this continues. We haven't had a fatality in that age group in the 5 to 15.
And any fatalities in that age group or anywhere under the age of 18 across the world have been children who have had serious underlying conditions, right? So, in other words, they could have been stricken down by any other virus, not just particularly COVID-19.
And of course, we have to remember that they are returning to schools as well, and special provision will have to be made in there. But I'm just
okay.
I'm
but
just,
the argument, I suppose, from the teachers is, Larissa, hold on for a second. It's not just the kids; it's the teachers. Now, of course, you know you've got unions representing teachers and saying, "Well, look, we don't want our members going back with a risk of, say, maybe they're living with their elderly grandmother and they have to then go in front of kids, you know, who generally, we all know, I'm not suggesting, by the way, that they're bad people, kids, but they tend to spread viruses.
Well,
right,
they do, except this one they don't.
Yeah,
and the science is that they aren't actually spreading this one. They're not significant transmitters. If you were to go to work with any other group, you'd be more at risk than going with children. And this one, for me, is the bit that really sticks in my craw, to be quite honest with you. Because in any functioning society, children are the priority. In any functioning and fair society. And when I hear teachers putting workplace concerns and health and safety and work to rule stuff ahead of children's needs, that's where I start getting angry on behalf of the children who have no voice and they need someone to speak up for them. For me, that's the worst of bureaucracy. Which is
I don't think the next generation. I don't think the next generation or this generation of children will forgive us for denying them their education if this continues on for too long. They've already missed 5 months of school. They're going to miss obviously 3 months during the summer now. And the suggestion that we send children back in primary school or secondary school for a day a week and 2 days for primary school if social distancing continues, I don't believe is workable.
No, it's worse than useless. Actually, for parents, it causes more problems than it solves. So you'd be in a situation there, like, for example, I only have one here to get back and forward to school, but I do work full time and I'm self-employed. So as anyone who's ever worked self-employed, you know, is that you have to make it work because otherwise you don't get paid and the whole thing falls down. We're kind of acting here in relation to the conversation around this, that school isn't a key function in society and in
of course it is. They're essentially child minders as well.
Well, they're certainly letting a lot of people to get back to work, including myself. I didn't work for 5 years. I was parenting for the first five, and then I was able to get back into the workplace. Thank God for the brilliance of teachers and things like after-school clubs and all those sort of things. And an awful lot of people rely on that to keep money coming into the house. I mean, what I think is very important, what the French education minister said, what's really important. There'll be people who will say, oh, are you advocating putting children in and putting them in danger? What I'm actually advocating there's risk involved in this whole thing here. But what has been found scientifically, both in Switzerland and in France, is that children are actually safer in school than they are at home. Because when you take into all the considerations and all the different families and dysfunction and poverty and cultural poverty and all those kind of things, various different problems in various different homes, and also just for well-being and routine and development, when you balance all those things up against the tiny risk, thank God there's only been a few hundred children in Ireland in this age range who have coronavirus, but when you balance that up together, what you come out with very, very clearly is the risk is tiny, the benefit is immense, and the danger lies in not doing it. And that's why we have to get them back.
Do you believe Joe McHugh is doing a good job? He seems to be bouncing from one side to the other, particularly when it came to the Leaving Cert recently as well. A lot of those students won't thank us for denying them the right to do their Leaving Cert. But anyway, do you think...
Yeah.
I believe the Leaving Cert should have been done, by the way. I believe it could have been done if they had tried hard enough. They just didn't bother. I think there was too much pressure from the other groups out there as well. But do you believe that Joe McHugh is fit for the job? Because he seems to bounce back and forward from one side to the other. I think his intentions are good, but I don't know if he's strong enough to get the job done.
Yeah, maybe a little bit more strength and a little bit more leadership there is required, because I have to say, in relation to the Leaving Cert, you could maybe nearly give him a bit of a leeway on that. I'm the same as you. I think it should have gone ahead. It's a disgrace, really, that it didn't. But at the time, maybe, to say, looking, he had to make that decision in March or April. It was actually probably, or it was around that time, I think, always being discussed. It was the worst of times. As we know, this is a novel virus. We don't know what's going on. But to stand over and not to completely shoot down unions who come up with things like, we will not tolerate a return to school unless social distancing guidelines are if social distancing guidelines are flouted. That's clearly ridiculous thing to say. Teachers should be clamouring to go back to school, not throwing obstacles in their way. And if I was the education minister, I would be very, very
clear. But they'll say they're not obstacles, Larissa. So, you know, school teachers listening today will say, well, these are genuine fears. These are not obstacles. For example, social distancing guidelines have been set in place for every other business. And they're saying, well, why not schools? Now, your argument, of course, is that children are the least risk. This is not a bunch of people in a pub. You know, these are children who, by what we've seen from Switzerland, the studies and contact tracing, there is no evidence that a child has spread it to an adult.
Yes.
But in saying that, they don't want to take that chance. Why are the rules different for us as school teachers?
Because we're coming back to the same argument again, because children are a different group. And even the Taoiseach himself has said they may look at bespoke regulations in relation to children. But also I would say as well is, you know, parents want to get back to school. Teachers want to get back to school. Children want to get back to school. It seems to me it's mostly really the unions that are having problems here. But here's another side.
Well, the unions will say they represent their teachers. You know what I mean?
They do, but often unions, as anyone who's ever been in one knows, sometimes they go down the kind of work to rule health and safety road a little bit too much, and they go into what I call safetyism, is where you become reluctant to make reasonable trade-offs demanded by more practical concerns. But you know, there is also an issue here, and I met a couple of parents this morning. We had to leave books back for the end of the year in the school. And what I met a couple of them, and what they were saying was, I'm okay with it. We're okay with it. There is an argument to be had here that teachers can protect themselves at a distance from the students and each other and the parents, all the adult group. But really, when you think about it, whether children are allowed in a group together or not is possibly essentially the decision of their parents. So if the parents are actually happy saying, look, I don't want my children being kind of pathologically divided all day long. You must stay 2 metres. You must stay 2 metres. And that I've decided that the psychological fallout of that will be worse than the social fallout. And I'm happy enough if they sit at single desks, if they're washing their hands at regular intervals, and if they've got good cough etiquette and they don't come into school sick, I'm happy with that. In my view, if the parents are happy with that, well, then the teachers should be able to go on.
Well, here's another thing, Larissa, right? Every child has a right to an education under the Constitution. I can see there being constitutional challenges in the future if we even suggest they don't go back to school. But anyway, but in relation to kids being sick, so we're being told that in the workplace, if you have any symptoms, and Irish people are great for symptoms, by the way, we love coming into work and saying, I'm feeling shit today. But in saying that, every child, I mean, I have three kids, and I went through the whole, you know, kind of naught to kind of 13 years of age. There's at least one of them constantly sick, right? So the snotty noses, coughs and colds, and kids always just went to school when that happened. You're not, and you know, your kid had come to you in the morning, I don't feel well, you're going to school, just go. So I mean, are we going to say that's going to come to an end? Because if that's the case, half the school will be missing, particularly in primary schools every day.
Well, I think that if that's our problem, we'll be very lucky come September, because that kind of problem compared to a situation where you have the kids in 2.5 days a week and they're supposed to come in at one time and they're staggered learning and then you're going home to do blended learning, that's the real nightmare situation for parents, because you might as well just leave work.
What about a paranoid parent? And there are a lot of paranoid parents, and maybe some of them understandably, who may have, you know, somebody, maybe they're living with grandmam and she's not well, or maybe they're living with somebody in the house who's vulnerable or maybe has a compromised immune system, and they say, I'm not sending my child back to school. Where do they stand legally? Do you believe they have, because at the moment you legally don't have a right to deny your child an education. You have to send them to school. You can only miss, whatever, 26 days of the year. So, yeah. I mean, where do they stand? Can they legally say, no, I want my child to learn at home?
Well, I wonder where that is. That's actually a very good question, because the irony of all this, of course, when the schools closed down on March the 12th, they were only supposed to do it as a short-term measure in order to flatten the curve and save the hospitals.
Yeah.
And then suddenly, like children have gone to school through wars and through the Cuban Missile Crisis, and yet we're still here going into June, and we're talking about September possibly not opening, which is ludicrous in my opinion. But you know, when you think of that, before that, if you'd been any extended days off, you'd be prosecuted. And yes, here we are with this big lengthy time off school. So I presume that once the schools are back, they're back. And that I can't imagine how there would be any leeway there to say, look, I have some sort of anxiety disorder, which kind of nearly would be when you look at all the science around my child. Because if you start trying to save everything, what happens is, you know, if you start getting that level of safetyism, I'm going to try and shut down this danger, another danger will pop up somewhere else.
Of course,
you know,
yeah.
So, you know, maybe the child doesn't go in and then they don't get a proper education, and then that affects, you know, obviously affects their life. So I suppose the answer to that really would be, if they're back, they're back. That's the way I would understand it.
And you've got to abide by the law. The law should be the same. In other words, you have to send your child to school.
It should be. And
if you have a personal circumstance, that's up to you at home to sort that one out and figure out how you're going to do that.
I would imagine if there's actually, now it would only be fair if there's children in the house with, you know, underlying conditions or other issues like that, that they will be dealt with separately. But I mean, the main point is, let's get to September with the attitude. And I'm glad to hear John Boyle there seemed to have a far more positive and enthusiastic. He actually sounded like somebody who wanted to get back into the classroom, which I believe most teachers do, by the way, especially at the primary school level.
Well, mind you, he is still saying at the same time, it's probably easier to keep them apart from the class next door, and even within the class, it may be easier. So he is suggesting still there may be social distancing in the classroom. He is still pandering to all this.
Once they're reasonable, you know, what I think is, if we get the situation, I don't know if you were the same in school, but my school in the 80s, we had a desk that was attached to a chair, and I remember the old inkwells were still in it.
Inkwells. I used to fill, I was the lick of the class. I was always asked every morning to fill the inkwells, because we, Larissa, I know that makes me sound really old, but when I was in school, we didn't have pens. We had, like, it was a wooden stick that you put a nib on and you dipped it in the ink.
Well, that's amazing. Now, I haven't met anyone yet who still had that. And people think I'm old, Niall, for saying that when I started in journalism, it was the black screen on the white type on the black screen on a computer, like that old, that very
computers?
Old
computer. We didn't have computers when I started work. We used typewriters.
Yeah. Oh, you got in. Typewriters had just ended when I came in the mid-90s in journalism. But I didn't get the ink pens, which I would have loved, by the way. But what I particularly loved, actually, was as a child who wasn't particularly enjoyed other children, kind of physical touch of other children, which lots of them don't, is I enjoyed the separateness of the desk and the chair. We were kept apart. You know, that's a very...
In those days, wasn't there two kids per desk? It was. Well, two kids per desk.
I went to a country school, right? So maybe there was less...
Rural Ireland, you were denied that bit of physical contact because the nuns were looking after it.
I seem to remember being in one on my own, right? So if it's possible to just put a single desk, I know all these things are going to cost money and everything and a lot of organisation, but I would think single desks, children coming in, as I was saying earlier on, making sure they're not sick, making sure they're coughing, making sure they're hand washing, all those things, you know, they're already in place. We've all changed behaviours. In fact, children are particularly good at it. They've just adapted in ways that I think most of us couldn't understand. But certainly when you look out now, all the parents are bringing their children to the park to get them some interaction with other children.
Well, I was going to say that to you when we come, and sorry, I'm running out of time, but when it comes to secondary schools, which we haven't really talked about too much, when it comes to teenagers, the only social distancing I'm seeing out in local parks and driving around is a 2-inch social distance. So they if they don't really give a damn about it out in the public, I don't know why we're so concerned about them going back to school.
No, I know. And I mean, like, this idea that they're not already doing it themselves, and I'm actually glad that they are, because one of the arguments that you could say is, oh well, maybe the children didn't get it because the school shut down, which isn't the case, because we've seen reports from all across Europe, schools returning with absolutely no problem, and both HEQA and the World Health Organization have said it's reassuring, it's fine, it's no problem. But the one thing that would prove that it seems to be they have some high level of immunity up to a certain age, and through, you know, from primary through to maybe teenage years. Mm-hmm. And I think that proves that the fact that we see them every day out in parks, rolling around with each other.
And they're not dropping like flies, thankfully.
No, exactly. Yeah. And also people who are back, the brilliant people, the guards came back, and we see how much they do for us in this country, and how much risk they take. That'd be like the guards saying, the teachers saying we're not going back, we need 100%, we need to be absolutely sure that all our members are safe. That's not possible in a pandemic.
Yeah, you know, you're absolutely right, because you bring up a really good point there in relation to Garda Síochána. I haven't heard the guards or the unions or the Garda Representative Association saying we want all guards wearing something, you know, that keeps them away from the passenger or the driver of a car when they're, you know, asking what speed they were doing. They've never done that. Because they accept they're a different group.
Yeah, and it's a vocation, actually, and the teachers are a vocation. And I mean, I think that they will put most teachers I know will put the children first more than anything else. But you see, the guards, they had to go around the place at the height of this pandemic with fellas spitting at them.
I know, yeah.
And arrest people. They didn't.
And by the way, somebody did point out in the journal.ie recently in relation to that, there obviously hasn't been, thankfully, a member of Garda Síochána that has died of COVID-19. And somebody said, I believe the uniform is like a vaccine. Listen, thank you very much indeed, Larissa Nolan, journalist. Thanks for coming on the air. I appreciate it. All right, let me go to Brian as well. Brian, you're on Classic Kids. How you doing, Brian?
How are you getting on?
Brian, you won't be sending your child back to school if it's only for one day.
Yeah, I don't see the point, like. I mean,
no, neither do I.
What are they going to learn in one day, like?
That they couldn't do at home.
Well, the thing is, like, I mean, for me, with my small lady, like to get her to do homework at home for her, for me, you know, or my wife, like, it's a lot different than getting her to do homework for a teacher. Like, I mean, the teachers obviously are able to discipline them.
Yeah, they have more authority when it comes to academia. Yeah, like, yeah, of course,
when,
yeah.
Like, when she's at home now and she's doing homework with us, like, I mean, if she's finding it a small bit hard, or if she's finding it hard, a.k.a. she doesn't want to do it, like, she'll start kicking up, like, so she'll start crying, and then at the end of it, you're like, yeah, well, look, just put it away, because...
yeah, because you're driving me mad. Like. Yeah, I know.
You know, so, I mean, I don't see the point. Now, I can see the point in sending her to school, maybe for the day, for her to interact with the kids and stuff like that, but as far as learning and doing homework and all that crack, I think it's a waste of time, like, because they're not going to learn from it.
And what,
like,
do you, I mean, what do you say to people or teachers who say, well, hold on for a second, you know, every other industry has guidelines and social distancing, although you heard there is a saying that children are a different category, of course, because according to the WHO, they don't spread the virus, or they don't believe they do. So, I mean, what do you say to teachers and parents who are still a little bit jumpy about the whole thing, and they're going, oh, I don't know if I want to be mixing with a load of kids who are running around hugging each other.
Like, I can understand, like, you can understand some parents like that, like, because like that they might have underlying problems and stuff like that. I mean, like, I can understand parents like that, because, look, if you have a parent, or if one of the children, or have grandparents, or has a parent that's sick, like, of course, their heart is going to be in their mouth, like, I mean, even though nothing might happen, but, like, I mean, they have the underlying problem, like, they're going to be afraid of it. That's just.
But if you have a child, you know, with respect to, has an underlying problem, or you have a family member with a serious underlying problem, say for example CF, which would be a respiratory problem. I mean, you're conscious before even COVID-19 came along. You would have had to have been very conscious of that if a family member comes in with symptoms of a flu, maybe, because that could be lethal for somebody with CF. Or if you have an elderly person in the house, you know, who has underlying conditions. I would imagine before COVID-19, unless you became complacent, you were conscious of all those things anyway.
Oh, you were, but I mean, it's gone to the stage where you were conscious of all those things, but like you've been told now, like that you could actually die from it. Like, I mean, that probably wasn't said before the COVID-19 came in. Like, it was.
In what respect? You can when you say you can die, that's a very Irish thing to say. It's like you're going out. And when you say you can die from, what do you mean? I mean, we kind of know that, but I was going to say thankfully, but that's the wrong words to use. Thankfully for the general population, sadly for an individual group, of course, this virus is quite ageist and seems to pick on elderly people, sadly. Yeah. So, I mean, in saying that, when you say you're going to die, I mean, for kids going to school, there doesn't seem to be any risk whatsoever.
Well, no, like, but I mean, what I think should happen there is, like, if it's a thing that there's going to be, you know, a big hullabaloo about it, what they should do is, like, put junior infants in a classroom together, put senior infants in the classroom together, instead of having a 10 o'clock break and they're all out in the playground and you're trying to keep them all away from each other. They're all inside the classroom with each other anyway, and they're going to be keeping their meter apart or whatever.
Are they really going to be keeping their meter apart, Brian?
Well,
no, they're not.
Well, I'm just saying, like, I mean...
Would you insist on that? Or do you think that's...
I genuinely wouldn't, like, I mean...
No, okay.
Me personally wouldn't, like, but... We'll just say for argument's sake, that's what's going to happen. So we'll just say that's what's going to happen. I mean, get the junior infants then out for their 10 o'clock break at 9 o'clock. Then at 9:30, 9:45, have the senior infants out. Don't have the whole school out.
So
in other
words, stagger all the breaks, yeah.
Exactly, because like, okay, the playground.
I understand what you're saying, and it makes sense, but it's a bit of a logistical nightmare.
I mean, into the nightmare having them to go to school one day a week as well, like.
I don't believe, according to the unions, that's a possibility, and Joe McHugh, but I don't believe that's an option at all.
I can't see the point in anyway, especially for 5 and 6 year olds when they're going to school and they're learning how to write and read and the whole lot. Maybe it might be different for a 5th and 6th or a 4th, because they've got the mentality that, like, oh, well, I have to do my homework, fair enough. But I mean, like, for children that are running home.
Yeah. Well, I mean, don't get me wrong. Primary school is important, very important. It sets a foundation for education. But I do believe what I'm really concerned about is children who are now going into junior cert or leaving cert year. And we cannot be denying them their education. Brian, thanks for that. I've got to take a break. Keep texting, keep WhatsApping. The number is 087-188-0008. Now, are you advocating just sending kids back to school and getting on with it without any social distancing? Yes, that's what I'm advocating. That's exactly what I'm advocating. That's what Larissa was advocating. But of course, Joe McHugh has said, well, look, I don't believe, personally speaking, Joe McHugh is strong enough to be the Minister for Education at this particular time. I think he's bouncing back and forward like a yo-yo. And I also believe that he's pandering too much to the unions. He is the Minister for Education. He has a responsibility under the constitution of this country to make sure that every child has a decent education. And they're not going to thank him for this. Particularly those children who are in very vital years, like junior and leaving cert. They cannot be missing more school. This is academia. They need it for their careers and for their futures. Those kids who missed out on their leaving cert, many of them will do fine because they'll get a good grade. Others out there will believe they're being hard done by. You do know there are, and many of them are already planning probably to sue the state. They should have done the leaving cert. We should have come up with a better plan. We knew this was happening back in March. We now know this is happening again. We've 11 weeks to sort this out. And I don't believe there's any sorting out to be done. I believe just let them go back to school. The evidence is clearly there for many countries across the world that children pose no risk to adults when it comes to COVID-19. There is no evidence of through contact tracing of any child passing it on to an adult. No evidence of it. So why are we making, when we make decisions around COVID-19 or indeed any virus or pandemic or any disease, we make it based on science. There is no science, or certainly there doesn't seem to be, to give us any reason why kids cannot go back to school. The only science, I believe at the moment, is paranoia. I have an interesting question that I want to kind of fling out there, because a lot of people have said this to me, because as we know, a lot of people have been out of work for 2 and 3 months, depending on which sector you happen to be in. For example, if you're a barman or a hairdresser, you're not going back till the end of this month or next month, maybe, for example, cinemas, maybe the month after, etc., shops last week. So you've been off for 2 months. So you go back to work, and that's it, you're grand, you're back in work again, and you say to your boss, I'm going away on holidays in August. 2 weeks, 3 weeks, whatever, 21 days, whatever you're entitled to. And your boss turns and says, well, no, you're not. You've already had 3 months holidays. What are you looking for? Now, your employer didn't pay you for that time off. They didn't pay you. The government paid your COVID payment. So my thinking from a legal perspective, and I don't want to piss in everyone's parade here, particularly if you're an employer, that you're still entitled to your holidays. Maybe I'm wrong, and if somebody knows the employment law better than I do, I believe you're still entitled to your 21 days, you're still entitled to your paid bank holidays, etc., etc. I believe you're still entitled to it. Because the fact that you were off for 3 months or 2 months or whatever case it happens to be, through no fault of your own, it wasn't like you decided to take that time off or you were sick or whatever. It was because the government told your business to close. Because there was a whole thing, wasn't there, going back a few years ago, that if your employer closed for a period of time and said to you, you have to take your holidays at that time, it didn't constitute as holiday time. In other words, you could take another week some other time because your employer can't tell you. They can advise or they can ask. And I know a lot of employers have been asking people, for example, who are currently still in work and throughout the pandemic, say particularly in radio and media and newspapers or whatever it is, listen, can you take a week's holiday because we don't want everybody taking their holidays in September when all this ends at the same time. And I can understand that. But in saying that, if you have been in that situation, maybe if somebody could send me a text, maybe give me a bit of feedback on that. Maybe you've been in that situation. So you've been out of work for 2 or 3 months. You go back. Are you still entitled to your holidays? Legally, I would imagine you are. Let me know what you think. The number is 087-188-0008. Let me get back to the schools because, Joe, you're on Classic Kids. How you doing, Joe?
Hi, Niall.
Hey, we'll be talking about the hairdressers later, Joe, by the way. Yeah, hairdressers.
I don't care about hairdressers.
We talk about them later. I'm just thinking all the women listening today. We'll be talking about the hairdressers later.
My hairdresser leaves two houses down.
Oh, so she's doing nixers. She's doing nixers, is she?
No.
On the black market.
No. But I'm here to rant about schools and the Department of Education and special needs schools. And no one gives one rat's ass about us.
Okay, so you've got a child with special needs.
I have a child with special needs.
Does he have an SNA in school?
He does.
Okay, so he's missing out, not just because it's easier for a child with no
he's
problems.
He's missing out everything.
Yeah.
Our kids are missing out everything. Therapies, appointments with doctors, essential appointments with doctors, essential therapies. Some of them, there are based in school. My son's school was trying to get through to the Department of Education because of July provision. Because July provision can be home or school-based 40 hours that are given by the Department of Education for the kids during summer. My son's school was trying to contact the Department of Education for God knows how long for them to be clear about guidelines so they could provide July provision for our kids in school and, you know, get all the health and safety right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they installed tables outside and these amazing cocoons for all the kids already thinking about social distancing. And unfortunately, because the Department of Education is not forthcoming, doesn't matter how many times they try to contact them, they didn't really engage, our kids are going to suffer because we're not going to be able, the school is not going to be able to deliver July provision for us. There's no plan for September. There's no plan for anything because no one talks about our kids. It's all, oh, poor secondary kids. Oh, at home, they can go to school. What about our kids? What about our therapy, the therapies for our kids? What about our kids regressing? So our kids don't have a right to education either?
I know a lot of parents out there in the similar situation to yourself are missing out on respite as well, which is not available
everything.
This year. Yeah, absolutely. No, I do understand that. And those kids, particularly children with autism or children with special needs, they're missing out a little bit more than other kids because it's easy for other, well, I say it's easy, a lot of kids can get, you know, they can get a handle on the whole online thing, they can work on their own and they can, but if you've got a kid with autism who needs that assistance all the time, they fall back further.
Parents needs home assistance. There's no speech and language, there's no OT, there's nothing. My kid needed to go to the psychiatrist. They do phone calls. What is a phone call good to me?
Okay, no, I get it. And I know Leo Varadkar did mention something last week in relation to setting up something during the summer for children with special needs. Maybe he'll address that tonight, Joe, when he comes on the television. Maybe. Dave, you're on Classic Kids. Thanks for that, Joe. Dave?
Hi, Paul.
Dave, you can't wait for the kids to go back to school.
I know, that sounds terrible.
No, it doesn't sound terrible. It's you're being honest.
No, I don't mean that in a bad way, and I don't mean that in a, like...
You know, just be honest. You want to see the back of him every now and again.
No, it's the routine. Do you know? Oh, no, jeez, I'm quite happy to have my young fellow home. There's no hassle out of him at all. But
right.
It's just to get him back to school, get him back into routine, you know, get some semblance of normality back into his life.
Well, it is. I mean, kids need schedules. They need routine. They need that environment because it. You know, they don't learn otherwise. You know what I mean? They just don't.
Because, I know I have to say, my youngest school and my youngest teacher in particular have been absolutely amazing. They've gone above and beyond to help and to facilitate the parents in any way, shape, or form they need. I mean, his teacher called down yesterday to the house with a little poem printed out in a card, a packet of crisps and some jellies, and a keyring for him. And a keyring had like a little glass vial with a note on the inside of it, and it was all covered in gold plate. You know, so like they're absolutely fantastic. You know, they really are. But at the same time, trying to do learning at home with them, you know, it's not a school environment. So you know, they're more likely to kind of space out, or you know, they're more prone to maybe not put in as much effort because they're not in that like learning environment.
And a lot of parents will say, you know, it depends on the child, of course. Their kids are better behaved in school because they figure, I suppose, the authority of school, you know, makes them want to do things. And if also their peers are around them, they don't want to misbehave in front of their peers. Whereas their mom and dad, they can just, you know, start crying if they don't want to do it. You know, so it's a kind of different environment. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I find mothers are a hell of a lot better at the whole learning from home.
Look, we got to give the women credit for this one. You know, they are better.
No, they are. They have a hell of a lot more patience than fellas do. You know?
Yeah, like, but some fathers are really good too, you know, and you know, I went through it a lot with my own son when he was very, very young. He had some difficulties, and I spent a lot of time with him every single day for 2 or 3 hours.
Of course, I
actually had to teach him how to spell again because he couldn't spell phonetically. So, they use phonics nowadays since 1982.
Yeah.
So I had to put this piece of string 7 foot on the wall with a bit of ribbon in the middle of it, and teach him how to spell visually, which is what we learned when I was young in school. We learned it's called coastline spelling. But so if anybody has any issue with their child learning to spell, use the thing. Do a bit of research. It's called coastline spelling, and it's where you visualize the word.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because everybody does it. Do you ever notice when you write something down that you're kind of confused about how to spell? You write it down and you look at it and you go, "Nah, it doesn't look right." So we know what a word looks like.
It's like when you learn the word, then you're actually, your brain is just looking at the first and the last letters.
Yeah, we look at the outline of the shape of the word. That's what we're looking at. Yeah.
So. Yeah, yeah. Jeez, that's cool. Yeah, no, with us it was phonetically. So you say phonetically in your head and then you write it out. That's how I learned it.
Yeah, but the problem with the English language is that, you know, something like, I think it's 22% of it is not phonetically spelt. So that's the problem. Yeah. You know, when you got words like night, you know, how do you work that one out? All right, but listen... Dave, I'm really wish for time today, but I get the point that you're making, absolutely, and I completely agree. I think some kids are better than others, by the way, at learning at home. We've got a couple of messages coming in here, by the way, one about the holiday entitlements.
As far as I know, you get a certain percentage of holidays based on the number of days that you work, so you will lose X amount of days for the days that you were paid on the COVID.
Yeah, naturally, you will lose a day and a half for every month that you haven't been in work if you're full-time. That's the way it works, 10 hours. Holiday pay, that's how you accrue your holiday pay. But that doesn't mean you're not entitled to take your holidays. You just miss out on those days, possibly. But there may be an exception to that rule from a legal point of view, because it's not your fault that you missed the days. It was the government's fault. So I don't know, this is going to be very complicated for a lot of businesses. But I do believe you're still entitled to take your holidays. That 3 months that you've been missing, which will amount to four and a half days in total out of your 21 days that you've lost in pay, you should be able to take it at your own expense. Somebody says, Niall, I was off for 3 months and my boss now wants to buy our holidays off us. And yes, I know companies who are doing that. So if you're still entitled to your holidays, which you are, your boss could turn around and say, well, listen, I'll pay your holiday pay. Can you come in? Because I don't want you going away, because obviously we've only got a certain amount of portion of the year left. Yes, your boss could do that if you agree to it. Also, for those people who are saying, for example, if a boss said to you at the start of the pandemic, listen, can you take your holidays now to accommodate us? I'm going to get anyone to take the holidays. If you agreed to that and you got paid for holidays and didn't get a COVID payment at that point, well, then that's your holidays gone. But if you went out of work, from the day you went out of work, you got a COVID payment, then you weren't on holidays. You were on a COVID payment. Completely different thing altogether. You're still entitled to your holidays. All right. Again, if you've missed out on 3 months, I don't know how the law is going to work around this. I'm sure there's going to be a few challenges. For every month that you've been off, you lose a day and a half. I think it's 10 hours of holiday pay. That doesn't mean you can't take that time off. So if you're due 2 weeks, for example, holidays, 4.5 of those days you won't get paid for because you weren't there for 3 months. So again, you're going to have to talk to your employer. But I think the best thing for everybody is to be understanding in these situations, because your boss is losing out as well. So particularly if you're in a smaller company, you know, play ball with the boss and do what's best for your company and for you as well. But make sure, of course, you get your rights and your entitlements, because that's the law. Sinead, you're on Classic Kids. How are you doing, Sinead?
Hi, Niall. How are you doing?
Good. Go ahead.
That's good. I was just calling up, actually, just about the last topic about special needs and, you know, lack of help or support.
Yeah. And is there still supports out there? Because somebody did send me in a text in relation to that, and they're booked in for July. Let me just see. I find it here. Yeah, they said this is on the DES website.
Yeah. So I actually have a beautiful daughter here sitting beside me, Sophie. Say hello, Sophie.
Hi.
Hi, Sophie. Hi, how are you?
Sophie's 9 and she has Down syndrome. But we actually, for the first time this year, so July provision is available for people, as you know, with special needs or with autism, and people with Down syndrome were never included. So because of the pandemic, we're very lucky this year, you know, and there was a big kind of campaign for it and it was rejected for years. And this year we're entitled to July provision, which I'm so excited about.
Okay.
But it's such a palaver when you to apply for it. There's no guidelines for it. You know, it was just announced.
I can hear her in the background. Yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, if people want information on that, you can go to www.gov.ie/summer provision. That's where it is. That's where the link for that is.
Yeah, it is. But like, so it was just announced that we were entitled to it. But it's when you actually look into this, a lot of my pals are applying for it just because they want the government to know that there's a demand. But they don't have time to do what you've got to do. Like, if the school's not on board, which most of them aren't, to find your own tutor, they have to fill out like a really extensive form.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it's signed by the school. You have to fill out your own. They have to have Garda vetting. So it's a big thing. Like, it's a great facility.
Okay.
If it works and if you get it, but it's just all the work that has to go into it.
I know.
you know, but it, I mean, it's
and what about kind of social distancing and all that kind of stuff? And
yeah, well,
are you concerned about that, Sinead? You know, when everything kind of goes back for Sophie, are you concerned about that, or does that, are you bothered by that at all?
Thankfully, she, yes, if you were to look at it, she would come under the vulnerable community.
Okay, so I didn't know. So are Down syndrome considered to be vulnerable with COVID-19?
Yeah. Well, it could be because, you know, a lot of people with Down syndrome would have heart conditions.
Oh, okay, okay.
Respiratory problems.
But thankfully, we're not seeing any kind of spread amongst a young community anyway. So, I mean, thankfully, that's the situation.
So I'm not too concerned. And in my particular case, actually, very luckily, Sophie doesn't have those conditions. So, but I would still prefer her to be, you know, like in distance with her tutor or whatever.
Yeah, well, hang on, do me a favour, because I want to go to news, but before I go to news, I just want to go to Linda as well, because she's waiting ages there. Unfortunately, I've only got a minute and a half left. Sorry, hello. Linda, you're on Classic Hits. How you doing, Linda?
Hi, Niall. I can resonate everything that lady's saying there. I'm an SNA. I work in a primary school. We have 2 units, 10 SNAs. Should I provision the joke? Joe McHugh he's living in a different planet. He wants to send SNAs to the slaughter by sending us to nursing homes, which isn't our profession.
Right. And why does he want to send you to nursing homes?
This was his thing when COVID happened. He thought
he wanted to bring in the troops, so to speak. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so troops with no training to work with a healthcare, you know,
right, okay.
Worker. Now what he's doing is him and Leo have decided, oh, well, let's do July provision. Great in theory. In reality, myself and my SNA colleagues, as that lady saying, there's a massive form. They're not offering insurance for us to go into people's homes if something happens. There's no social distancing.
You're not paid until November, which is shocking.
We're not paid till November, exactly.
You're not going to get paid till November.
You don't get paid till November. This is July provision.
Oh, stop.
And also, can I just say, SNAs and teachers are on par. We do the exact same thing in July provision. Most SNAs have level 7 and 8, the same as myself.
Yeah.
We get paid half of what a teacher is paid for July provision.
We were actually talking about this earlier on, myself and Alina, before we came on the air. We were talking about SNAs versus teachers and why SNAs get paid so much less than teachers.
Yeah.
Now, I understand teachers do go to college for a long time and the SNA course is obviously a lot shorter. I understand that.
Yeah.
But essentially doing the same job.
And as a parent,
Hang on, Sinead, for a second. Just let Linda finish what she wants to say. Sorry, Linda, go ahead.
A lot of my colleagues are teachers. We all get on great. And they will tell you they cannot operate a mainstream class with children with special needs without an SNA.
Unfortunately, Sinead had to go there. But, I mean, this just seems like they've just rebranded what was already there in the first place and they're just not going to pay it in November. Like, Joe McHugh doesn't seem to have any guidance here at all.
No, basically, as I said, now I hope that, you know, parents are appreciative of our work, principals, etc. I hope now Joe McHugh and the rest of the government realise the work that SNAs do. Myself, and I can speak for my 10 colleagues, we wish we were with the boys. We wish we were with the children that we work with. But Joe McHugh has made our lives hell since March, basically, because they said, you're being redeployed. You're going to a nursing home. Then we were redeployed to the HSE. Then we were told...
And what were you doing in the HSE? Contact tracing and stuff?
Basically, you could do contact tracing, or they were meant to sign us up with children that we could work with.
Okay.
Then they told us no. Then our union forced it. It was back and forth. But basically, all through it, no SNA that I know didn't want to not work. We wanted to work with children.
And how old are the children you were working with, Linda?
So I worked with fourth class primarily, 9 and 10.
Okay.
And the rest of my day was with preschoolers on the autism spectrum.
And are you happy to go back working with, you know, fourth classers again? Yeah. I mean, you don't believe there's any risk to you.
No, I don't. Joe McHugh, here we go.
Don't insult me.
Do you know what? I take the risk now, but there's no risk with children.
No,
I don't care
no
what
risk.
Anybody says.
No, there doesn't seem to be any risk at all.
I mean, I change nappies, we change feeding pegs, things like that. None of that. I am, you know, I don't feel I'm a risk. Those children aren't a risk to me. But they've left those children. And like children's
eyes. And what are your unions saying to you? Are your unions suggesting that you can't go back to work unless there's insurance in place, unless there's PPE in place? And
Force, I will say, have been good. The only thing that they've come out lately is by saying that when the department released the July provision information, they never they never had any consultation about our pay. So when that document came out, they'd never approached our union. to say that, oh, this is the pay. They just threw it out there. So a primary school teacher is getting paid 38.33 an hour for July provision. An SNA after 2011 is getting paid 15.50 for the same job.
Well, I'm going to read out a text for you. Now, you can defend yourself in this text. I'll help you defend yourself if you want to. They most definitely don't do the same job, Niall, and certainly don't have the same qualifications. Hence, the pay is a lot less. A teacher is a teacher that teaches a multitude of subjects. An SNA is an assistant, not a teacher. They assist the child with special needs in the school.
In July, yes, ordinarily, you're 100% stand and teach in the class, grand, which, by the way, a lot of SNAs do, which, by the way, we supervise, we do yard duty, we do all those things. Yes, we don't spend 4 years in the same path, but for July provision, we do the same job. So if I throw myself out there and say I'll do July provision, I am doing the same job a teacher is going to do, because a teacher or an SNA can provide July provision. So if I was to do it, I am tutoring somebody and I'm helping that child with special needs the same way a teacher.
Yeah, because you're teaching the child during July provision, you're teaching them social skills more so than
it's
academia.
Skills,
yeah.
It's like going to a shop with a child, social stories about the whole thing. So it is the same. 100% appreciate it. I mean, 28 children in a class, that's no joke.
Yeah.
But what
you
I'm
just want a fair playing field, is what you want.
We want a fair playing field, and we want our profession to be recognised like a teacher. I mean, any teacher I've been very lucky. I've worked with fantastic teachers who cannot keep a mainstream class going when there's children with needs.
No, because unfortunately they distract. They can distract other children and distract the class. Yes,
you know, absolutely. And Joe, like, it's actually really if the teachers had been treated the way the SNAs have been treated during this COVID emergency, they'd be on strike.
Yeah,
and they would. And you know,
so remind me again. So okay, so remind me again during the July provision. How much do you get? What is it per hour?
If you're an SNA pre-2011, you'll get 16.77. An SNA after 2011, you'll get paid 15.50. So it's half of what
a
qualified primary school teacher gets.
Even though you're doing exactly the same job.
You're doing the same job for July 3.
That's ridiculous,
Yes, in the classroom it's different, 100% agree. I wouldn't want to do that job.
Yeah, in the school setting, you're not referring to the school setting. Yes, of course.
I'm talking July provision. Yeah. Because I have both friends, colleagues and teachers who we have all said it is the same during July provision.
And by the way, in relation to going back to work, when do you think you're starting back again?
From speaking to my principal, our school has been fantastic. My principal is amazing. We SNAs and teachers, it's a level playing field. It doesn't matter whether you're the cleaner in the school, you get treated the same way teachers, SNAs.
It's good to hear.
That kind of crap, you know. But we got told the other day what classes we'll have, and we will be back to school in September. We're not sure how. That we have to wait and see.
Yeah, I'm assuming you mean they're probably not going to be social distancing kids.
No, at that age.
I don't think it's even possible.
I'm going to be working with preschoolers, so who all are on the autism spectrum disorder, and I will be with them for 5 days. Or, you know, a full week, and it's impossible. The children that I work with, they could lash out, they could need time in the sensory room. You can't, when you're working with a child, especially, it's impossible. I can't be 2 metres apart from someone.
No, she's able to complicate it completely.
And
you wouldn't be able to.
Also, changing, there's the whole thing of changing nappies, peg feet, and all those sort of things. You cannot do that from 2 metres apart.
Well, fair play to you. I wouldn't be certainly able to do it. I think it's a vocation more than anything else, to be honest.
Now, that's the hurtful thing. You don't become an SNA for the pay, let me tell you.
No.
You do it because of the
you do because you care.
Children.
Yeah.
Like, I honestly, Niall, I work in a deaf school, Niall, and from when I heard that we were shutting down, I couldn't sleep properly because I was worried about the children. I was worried about how it would affect them, how they'll regress backwards after coming so far on.
Yeah.
And then the government just left them to it. And I honestly believe Joe McHugh, with this July provision, he just threw it out there, and he knows SNAs won't sign up because nothing's very clear. And then he'll be able to go on television and say, oh, only 7 SNAs signed up.
But you know what? What I can understand is the Minister for Education of this country for the last God knows how many years has had very little to do with the greatest respect, because education system tends to run itself, apart from the odd strike every now and again for pay. But at the one time when he's really needed, I think, you know, I'm going to just say it, I think he's failed miserably.
They'll leave in search. Absolute no reason why they couldn't have gone ahead.
Well, they didn't because they left it too late to sort it out. That's why it didn't go ahead.
Too late.
Yeah.
He wants to be able to stand up at the bottom of the step with Leo and say, only 7 SNAs signed up. Oh, it's the SNA's fault. And he wants the parents to turn on us because we're not signing up to do it. But any parent I've spoken to understand the plight of SNAs. We want to do it. We've wanted to work with your kids. We would have done everything since March to help, and we weren't allowed.
All right, well, look, it's interesting, actually, because The Independent are just reporting now, for example, that the announcement that's going to be made tonight, part of that announcement of the new roadmap or accelerated roadmap will be that 100 people can now attend a wedding. I know a lot of people are getting excited. They've just said it. Yeah, there you go. You just heard it here first. The Independent.ie reporting it.
Don't do it.
And also weddings, sadly funerals as well, and indoor gatherings from the 20th of July, that they've brought that forward now, that up to 100 people can attend those events. So if you're planning to get married, you know, with less than 100 people, 99 people, in August, it looks like your wedding is probably going to go ahead. So what I'm thinking here is...
I'm waiting on the hairdresser.
So much Helena. Here's where Helena's just said, "Me here next week." Okay, so the hairdressers, I think, is going to be next week. Yeah, they're just. It looks like, you know, it'll be the end of this month, which would be that's actually a week and a half. Yeah, a week and a half, 2 weeks away. So now, here's the thing that I can't understand. So we're talking about schools and the idea that we might not be able to get kids back to school in September. They might have to go back 1 day or 2 days, depending on social distancing, right? And you've got 30 kids in a class, in the average primary school class. And yet we can allow 100 people to go to a wedding, but we can't allow 30 kids to get into a class together. I mean, what are we thinking? There's no science behind it. We're just making this up as we go along.
But so basically, what the guidelines they've given schools, from my understanding, from speaking to colleagues, is we'll be with the kids. Then at lunchtime, adults will have to be staggered around the place, or if in a preschool setting, it has to be the same person with the children in a pod.
That's nonsense. That's not going to work.
We had
the spokesperson for the creches on there about 2 weeks ago, and she's just not workable. She can't put children into a pod. It's ridiculous. No. Carry on. And by the way, the idea that they're rewriting the roadmap now. I'm just getting this information in my ear now as I'm speaking. And hairdressers and gyms will be allowed to operate from the end of the month. So if a load of people can run around, you know, sweating their brains out in a gym, why can't we have kids back in a classroom by September? I just don't get it.
Niall, I have to say, I genuinely believe they could have went back in June. Let's be honest.
I think they should have.
Give the kids who are
2 weeks, even 2 weeks back in the class.
2 weeks, yeah. That would have been something, some sort of it. Because let me tell you, I have 2 children myself. They've been doing distant learning or whatever, using the laptops. Like, that's not, like, that just can't go on.
No,
actually don't, and I understand parents. And then if the children that are from deprived backgrounds, there mightn't be internet, there mightn't be devices, whatever. Nobody thought about this. They just thought it's a great way to be brilliant and keep all the kids off. Like, it's...
Yeah.
I don't know. Okay. I actually don't know.
All right, well, listen, thanks for your help. And Linda, I wish you well, by the way. And I believe I value you just as much as the school teacher during the summer, all right?
Thank you, Niall.
And every other time, too. Thank you very much indeed, Linda.
You've always got our back, Niall. Thank you.
All right, see you, Linda. Bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
And a big shout-out, of course, to all the SNAs in the country who do a wonderful, thankless job, of course, because they are looking after children with special needs and not just teaching them or helping them, to guiding them through their education. Because, of course, we know the teacher is the one that teaches them, but they have to explain it to every child. But they also have to look after all the other social aspects of a child with special needs as well. And dealing with children that can be very, very difficult to deal with. And parents know that if they have a child with special needs as well. We have to be honest about that.
Real people, real opinions, real talk radio. The multi-award-winning Niall Boylan Show. Classic hit.